It's a few minutes after 9 o'clock at KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM. Well, for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Time now for Talking Animals on KUCI.
There's an ant crawling up your back in the nighttime. There's an ant crawling up your back in the nighttime. But you think that's okay while you're sleeping. That ant crawled in your head in the nighttime. That ant crawled in your head in the nighttime. But you think that's okay while you're sleeping. Someday that ant, he will grow up to be president. Someday that ant, he will grow up to be president. But you think that's okay while you're sleeping. The president calls your name in the nighttime. The president calls your name in the nighttime. And that will spoil your dreams while you're sleeping. In the nighttime, the man ransacked your house. In the nighttime, as the ant crawls up your back while you're sleeping.
Music from They Might Be Giants with a song called Ants as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine and streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole enchilada, the whole, nine yards, the whole, whatever else you could substitute in there as you're making an annoying list. Is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, and I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. We're very nice and friendly here, so there's really no reason not to. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name, perhaps not surprisingly, is Talking Animals. And other ways to be in touch, though obviously less immediately, include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And, of course, checking out our website, talkinganimals.net. That's right, again, it's .net, folks. Also, before I move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting rendition of The Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means, and we aim for a pretty reasonable balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. How do you like them apples? But clearly the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Walter Boyce, director of the UC Davis Wildlife Health Center, a wildlife veterinarian and researcher, and the expert various state and county agencies bring in when there's been a mountain lion attack, like the one at Whiting Ranch here in Orange County back, I think, in January. I don't remember the exact date, but it was in January, where sadly the mountain lion killed one guy who had been bicycling along the trails and severely injured another woman. But anytime there's anything like that, more recently he was brought into Griffith Park to kind of assess things. So whether there's been an attack or to sort of gauge the threat of one, Walter Boyce is the guy. So we'll get filled in on various aspects of mountain lion behavior, including how one develops the expertise to make such assessments, and of course how to avoid a mountain lion encounter. And who knows what else, when Walter Boyce joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, observations, of course, any news stories, animal-related news stories you might have spotted that should bring your attention, that all be most welcome. Again, the number is 949-824-5824. 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So with that in mind, talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, here we go. As gruesome as it is, we almost have to start with this story. This, it's covered various places at various degrees, but I got this from Saturday's LA Times. Headline, no delay in sentencing of dog's killer. And it starts off, an Orange County judge refused Friday to postpone sentencing until November for a La Habra man convicted of beheading his dog. On Election Day, voters could amend the three strikes law and shave years off of James Andrew Abernathy's potential life term. Quote, I'm not going to wait for Proposition 66, Superior Court Judge Kazuharu Makino told the third strike candidate, who turned 43. On Friday, Abernathy was convicted in June of beating his German Shepherd mix with a golf club in January 2002, shoving a wooden stake through her heart and decapitating her with pruning shears. He has two previous convictions. For assault with a deadly weapon, the judge set sentencing for October 8th after reminding Abernathy's lawyer, Bill Morrissey, that he could revise the sentence if the proposition passes. Morrissey said he will ask the judge not to consider the last crime a strike. Animal cruelty, he said, is not one of the specified, quote, serious or violent offenses specified under the 1994 Three Strikes Law that imposes sentences of 25 years to life on repeat felons. If McKenna does not deem the dog killing a strike, he could sentence Abernathy to 6 years in prison, twice the maximum term for the crime. And it goes on from there, but, if your stomach isn't turned and you like to comment, weigh in on any aspect of that, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And in a story I just missed last Monday, basically, but it's pretty interesting in terms of the implications and some of the stuff we've talked about here with some of our guests that have either expertise on zoos and zoo-related issues and or about elephants, captive elephants. So I'm just going to read a bit about this story to you, also from the LA Times last Monday. Headline, San Francisco Zoo embroiled in controversy as this city's, again, dateline from San Francisco, as we like to say, as this city zoo prepares to send its last two elephants into retirement at a California wild animal sanctuary, a trade group that represents North American zoos and theme parks is threatening to pull the zoo's accreditation. Shortly after zoo director Manuel Molinedo decided in June to send the two pachyderms to the sanctuary in the Sierra foothills, the American Zoo and Aquarium Association said it, quote, fundamentally disagreed, end quote, with how the decision was made and that it would, quote, vigorously enforce our professional ethics and accreditation standards. In a statement sent to San Francisco officials in June, Association Executive Director Sidney Butler said Molinato's decision raised, quote, serious ethical and accreditation concerns, end quote, because the zoo director ordered the elephants move without allowing the association's, quote, species survival plan, end quote, committee to review the decision and perhaps order city officials to send the animals to another accredited zoo or animal park. If the San Francisco Zoo loses its accreditation, it would be barred from sending animals to or receiving them from other accredited zoos across the country, said Nancy Chan, a zoo spokeswoman. Butler suggested in a statement that political pressure from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, supported by animal rights activists, might have prevented Molinato from making an, quote, independent, end quote, decision regarding the elephants. Molinato, former head of the Los Angeles Zoo, said his predecessors at the San Francisco Zoo have been strongly criticized for years by animal rights activists for keeping elephants in a small, antiquated enclosure. So, story goes on from there, of course, but basically to summarize, so the AZA is essentially, you know, steamed at the San Francisco Zoo for sending the elephants, and doesn't say, it probably does deeper in the story, but to the R2000 sanctuary that we talked about a number of times on the show here, and we spoke with Pat Derby at one point, co-founder of PAWS, and that's the 2,300 acre sanctuary up in San Andreas, and already has a number of elephants, and they have a great, great setup. There's actually some cool pictures on our website, talkingamals.net, of some being hosed down, enjoying a jacuzzi. I mean, they could not be happier, I mean, relative to being captive elephants. So these people are saying, look, you know, you shouldn't have done that. You should have, you know, consulted with us more, and maybe sent them to another zoo. Even though the decision was largely predicated on the fact that, A, I think more and more people are realizing, as we also heard here on Talk Animals, they really can't keep elephants in captivity if their enclosure, especially, is as small as San Francisco Zoo acknowledged that it was. So they're maybe going to get penalized for that decision, and boy, does that seem like heading in the wrong direction when other people like Les Schobert, who we spoke to in August and has years and years of experience running zoos and a lot of specialized expertise with elephants, said really almost any zoo situation just isn't going to work. What they do need is big expanses of land, not unlike the R2000 facility, or of course the Elephant Sanctuary, and we also spoke with Carol Buckley at the end of August about that. So anyway, any thoughts, comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And we've also talked a couple times here in the news segments about the proposed ban on foie gras. So the California legislature has just passed SB 1520, and it's legislation that will ban the force feeding of ducks and geese in order to produce foie gras. The bill would also ban the sale of foie gras in the state. The bill has passed the legislature. It's now on the governor's desk. So some folks have sent me a little notice urging people, listeners, who are of similar minds to make a quick, very quick phone call to Governor Schwarzenegger's automated service. All you need to do is push a button, ask him to support the bill. You call 916-445-2841, and then the voicemail prompts you to press 2 to voice your opinion about legislation, and then you press 4 to leave a message on SB 1520, the force-fed birds bill. Then press 1 to support that bill, and that's it. You're done. So we, you know, absolutely urge you to take just a minute and do that. Another way to go about it, if you're more of an online type, to accomplish the same task, go to www.gov, and once you hit there, and when you get choose your type of comment, click supporting, and then there's a drop down box for the subject line. Please select force fed birds / SB 01520, and that's it. So make a call, send an email, check back with me if you didn't get that. I want to double-check the details, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, or again, you can IM us by way of AOL Instant Messenger, screen name, Talking Animals. Far more locally here, I mentioned this a few times, but this is our last time to mention this one, plug it, because it's coming up this Saturday. It's the Doggy Show 2004 at the Costa Mesa Bark Park. That's, of course, in Arlington and Newport Boulevard and T-Winkle Park. And again, it's this Saturday, September 25th, from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. And it's basically a chance for your dog to strut his or her stuff. And it might be a matter of grooming, what they look like, what they can do. It seems like it's pretty wide open here, as I can tell here from what I've got on these materials. But sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. And, of course, the Bark Park's a really cool place just to go any day, but especially on the day of the Doggy Show 2004. So if you want to find out more, you can call 949-451-2178. Or you can email Dean Clayton at deanclayton@newportjaycees. That's NewportJayceeS.org, and find out more. So that's, again, this Saturday, September 25th, Costa Mesa Bark Park, 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. It's time now for our animal news sort of quick quiz. And as you might know, this is just a very quick true-false question. And the first person who calls in with the correct answer, though, they get a prize. And what kind of prize, you may be asking yourself? I'm glad you asked. It could range from a lot of stuff, from lint rollers. If you've got an animal that lives with you, you might have a lot of, say, dog hair, cat hair. We got lint rollers. We've got a CD from Ian Anderson, a guest many, many moons ago on the show, but some animal songs on that CD, and it's been new from his interview with us. Quite an expert on cats, various kinds of cats. We've got books, including one by Shirley MacLaine. Not yet a guest on the show, but I'm not giving up. But one of the reasons her book is a potential prize here is that it was co-written by her dog, who I think has a very nice literary style. We also have cat toys, dog collars, jewelry, kind of a cool handcrafted necklaces with charms. We've got a book called Meatless Meals for Working People. We've got T-shirts from various animal organizations, including the aforementioned, if I may say aforementioned, Paws, including a very cool T-shirt that says, Elephants Don't Belong in Circuses. Indeed. And many other things, cool little stuff, to toys and other things, and the list goes on. So, you would have your choice of those, both for this animal quiz that we're about to do, or later for Name That Animal Tune that we usually close out the show with. So that's coming up. So keep those prizes in mind as we launch into our quiz question for today. It's true or false. Greyhounds have the best eyesight of any breed of dog. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And, of course, we'll open that up to instant messaging as well, AOL Instant Messenger, screen name, talking animals, whichever comes in first. But the correct answer would have the choice of those prizes. All right. I think I've over-explained that now, have I not? Okay, excellent. Moving on to some other little events coming up, or big events, as the case may be. This one's going to be, I think, pretty cool. So coming up on September 28th, and it's a gala benefit called Who's Your Doggy? An evening of comedy and canines, and headlined by Lily Tomlin, but also featuring Meryl Marco, the really wonderful author and Emmy-winning TV writer, huge, huge dog person. Of course, she was a guest on the show some months back as well. And many moons ago, she was the creator of Stupid Pet Tricks on The Letterman Show. So, also Henriette Mantel and others. And it sounds really cool. It's a benefit to raise funds for New Leash on Life, one of Southern California's largest nonprofit animal rescue organizations. So, for reservations and further information about that big to-do, you can go to their website, newleash.org, or you can call 661-255-0097. Again, the date of the event is Tuesday, September 28th. And I'm going to just squeeze in one more thing, and then we want to jump into the comedy corner and then speak with our guest, Walter Boyce. So, but I haven't mentioned the Animal Rescue site in a few shows, and so I should. And that's basically a website. The address is the Animal Rescue Site, S-I-T-E, of course, .com. And if you simply go there and click on Feed an Animal in Need, that's indeed what happens. There are corporate sponsors and advertisers who are using the number of daily visits to donate food and otherwise help out abandoned, neglected animals. So in exchange for that kind of exposure. So please, go there. Go every day and click on Feed an Animal in Need, and you will have done a very easy but cool good deed for that day. So can't beat that, right? All right. So I think that's all we have time for. If we have other time left to do on the show, we'll come back to some other news items. But of course, if there are any news stories or announcements of events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits. Maybe you have an animal quiz question you'd like to offer us. Any other animal topic that's on your mind, the email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And also please remind you, again, redundantly so, but, you know, can't be too thorough, I guess, on this kind of thing. About the Talking Animals website, we hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net, and sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, sort of photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Bill Engvall with a piece called Dorkfish on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
See, I think we just try to figure out too much about animals. We should just leave them alone. I'll give you a great example. In the California desert, they found bones of a prehistoric porpoise. And they're saying it's interesting because this porpoise's upper jaw sticks out a lot further than his lower jaw. So I figure he's got to look like... And they're already trying to figure out if this upper jaw was used for, like, mating or catching fish. I'm thinking, what if it's just a goofy-looking fish? You know, like a dork fish. He's like, oh, this ain't the ocean. Woo! I better find me some water. Because can you imagine if you were fishing and you caught a dork fish? Because you know your friends would be like, hey, man. What kind of fish is that? You'd be like, oh, nothing. Because you know that fish would stick his head out of that bucket. I'm a dork fish. He caught me on a corn dog. I was swimming underneath the ocean, and I said, what's the corn dog doing underneath the ocean? But you know me, boy. I love them damn corn dog, boy. Woo! I saw that bad boy. I bit it. Boom, I was in the boat. That's the last thing I know. It'd be pretty cool if they sold them in pet stores. Because you know they say pets always look like their owners? It's like you go over to your friend's house. Hey, Buford. What kind of fish is this? Dark fish? I'm just fixing to feed him. What do you feed a dark fish? Corn dog? Boy, they just gobble them up. But you got to take that stick out. They'll eat that stick.
All right. That's Bill Engvall with a piece called Dorkfish, taken from his album, also called Dorkfish. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org, and some of you no doubt are listening that very way. Some of you, of course, perhaps arrived through our small website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. And earlier in the show, of course, I mentioned that this week's guest is Walter Boyce, director of the UC Davis Wildlife Health Center, a wildlife veterinarian and researcher, and the expert, the guy, basically, that various state and county and probably other agencies bring in when there's been a mountain lion attack or to assess the threat of one. So there's much other stuff hopefully we'll get into as well. There's lots to discuss and learn. So let's remind you of the phone number in case you'd like to join us, 949-824-5824, as we welcome Walter Boyce to Talking Animals. Walter, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you.
And there is a lot I do want to cover and learn about the Wildlife Health Center and you and other topics, but since we're sort of at least initially primarily kind of focused on mountain lions, let's plunge in there. What's something about mountain lions that most people don't know that they should?
Hmm. something about mountain lions that most people don't know that they should. Well,
there is a prize. There is a prize for this, Walter. It sounds like a little like a quiz question, so I should offer a prize to you if you.
You know, there is a lot about mountain lions that people ought to know because many people in California are basically sharing their backyard and their front yard with mountain lions. And I believe it's a good thing to know who your neighbors are and know what they like and know what they don't like.
Yeah. And so what I mean, because I think there are, that's just it. I think there's people who are living near those areas, or especially they're going out and doing activities. They're hiking, they're going mountain biking, they're doing things, and maybe don't know as much as they should, and maybe that's where some of the problems kind of rest. I mean, what are some things that that people that either live in those areas or, you know, for recreation or other activities go near those areas where mountain lions would be found, what should they do to be a little smarter about minimizing any kind of risk?
Sure. Well, one of the things to keep in mind is pretty much wherever we have deer, you can have mountain lions. We like to say where deer go, lions follow. Mm. So whenever you're in an area that has deer, there's the potential and indeed maybe the likelihood that there's lions there. So lions are very elusive, very secretive. You're not going to see them very often. Yet you need to be aware that they're there, and the behaviors that you engage in are going to be perceived by a mountain lion in different ways. During the daytime, lions are typically very inactive. They're curled up under a bush, kind of resting. So during the daytime, lions are not out and about. Most of the time, that's when we're out and about, though. We're hiking, playing, doing things outside. You're not unlikely to see lions then, but as it approaches the dusk and evening hours, mm-hmm. lions become active. Around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock this time of year, lions begin to move around. And if by chance you do encounter a lion, what's most likely to happen is the lion's going to turn around and go the other direction. If on the very rare chance a lion behaves in a somewhat intimidating way towards you, either engages in a staring contest or even moves towards you. Again, this is unlikely, but if that does happen, a couple things you want to do. You don't want to turn and run. You don't want to crouch down and try to hide. Basically, you want to act big and be the dominant animal in that encounter.
Mm-hmm.
If you have established eye contact, you want to maintain eye contact. And if by chance, and again, this is a rare chance, a lion moves aggressively towards you,
mm-hmm.
you want to wave your arms, yell, act as big as you can, and basically scare it away.
So unlike what you might do with other animals, I think it's bears and some others where you actually are supposed to avoid eye contact. If you establish it, you're sort of supposed to maintain it, but it sounds like in this case, too, you're not supposed to do anything that is going to make the lion think you're a prey. So if you run or if you crouch down, that's going to seem more, I guess, deer-like, for example.
Well, exactly. You're yeah. going to potentially trigger that response in the lion that you are prey.
Mm-hmm.
We very much like to say that humans are not on the menu as far as lions go.
Yeah.
Lion attacks on people are very rare.
Right.
But it also makes sense for us not to do anything that might encourage a lion to think that we are.
So is that, I mean, Walter, so let's say that, you know, the awful attacks that happened, you know, locally here in Orange County in January. Now, some of this, I guess, is only speculative and some, I guess, was more directly kind of witnessed. But, I mean, were the people that were riding bikes in that park, and I guess one, the best theory on the man who was unfortunately killed was that he was maybe repairing his bike.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of crouched down, and so just even in that way, even if he wasn't, maybe his back was turned, maybe he wasn't even aware that there was a mountain lion there, just by virtue of in that position. Or was there some other factor? Was maybe something else going on with the lion, you know, protecting a baby, sick? I mean, or is there just, mm-hmm. is it all just kind of hard to really pinpoint? But I mean, by virtue of maybe being crouched, working on that bike, was he right away asking for trouble, even if he didn't realize that a lion was there?
You know, it's really hard to know for sure what happens in any of these events.
Mm-hmm.
There have been slightly over a dozen people killed by lions in California over the past 100 years, so there's not a whole lot of information to draw really firm conclusions.
Sure.
And in the situation where Mark Reynolds was killed
mm-hmm.
and then Aniello was attacked, we probably will never know what actually triggered the attacks in those
right.
cases. You certainly can't say that Mark Reynolds was doing something that invited the lion to attack. There's there's really no understanding what triggered that. Ann Yellow was just riding her bike down the hill at a fairly fast clip, and the line came over her shoulder and literally hit her while she was on her bicycle.
Yeah.
There's nothing you could
do to avoid that.
No, and it's pure speculation, but perhaps the crouched over position that you're in on a mountain bike going down a hill resembles the position a deer is in as it's moving or running through the forest. And, and maybe it triggered that kind of chase response and attack response that we even see in domestic cats. If you roll a ball of yarn past them while they're on the floor, they go from being inactive to springing into action.
Sure.
So I'm not concerned about going out in the environment where mountain lions are. I'll do it in the daytime. I'll walk without fear, but I'll also walk with an understanding that I'm sharing this environment with a large, strong predator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to be aware of my surroundings. If I have my children with me, I'd like to have my children close enough to me where I can see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the smaller a person is, the more likely it is that they might be mistaken by a lion as a prey.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just common sense. And if you know that you're in an area where there's lion activity, think about those early morning and dusk hours as the times when you're more likely to accidentally encounter a lion. Those are good times to not necessarily be hiking by yourself or to have your children running out by themselves playing.
Mm-hmm. Just basic odds, playing the odds, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Walter, to what extent is are there other factors? Like, let's say that I mean, obviously, deer is, you know, that's the main thing for the mountain lion. But I mean, to what extent, if there's not deer, I mean, does that play a role into how they may forage in areas that again might surprise people? Or is it, again, more just people not being aware of their surroundings and it's really what they're doing that's probably going to up the odds of there being a problem?
I mean, how many people in California now? Maybe 35 million, and the number's growing.
Sure.
And many of us love to have our homes in areas where there's a semblance of a wild and a natural environment, and that's a mountain lion's home too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mountain lions are opportunists. They basically are trying to make a living by expending as little energy as they can. Deer are the primary prey, but lions will certainly feed on any other animal that's readily available to them. And we make lots of animals available to them, our domestic animals, dogs, cats, donkeys, geese. You name it, anything that we keep around our homes might look like an easy meal to a lion.
Sure.
And unfortunately, many of us make it way too easy for a lion to basically make a meal of these animals. And as a consequence, lions will kill these animals, and so we lose our valued pets and livestock. And the consequence on the lion side of things is about 100 or more lions are killed every year on what are called depredation permits, when people request from the Department of Fish and Game the authorization for a lion who has killed one of their animals to be killed.
And actually, I want to that reminds me of some questions I had. Let me just first remind our listeners, this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. We're speaking with Walter Boyce, director of UC Davis's Wildlife Health Center, and really the expert on mountain lions. We'd love to have you join the conversation by calling us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And so, yeah, Walter, you know, that one of the things I found interesting and sort of just trying to brush up a bit for the interviews is along those lines, can you talk a little bit about what happens when a lion has attacked someone or otherwise been declared a public safety threat? I mean, then they do get that permit? Is that, I mean, basically the next order of business is that animal gets killed.
Right. Well, and it's important to distinguish between a public safety incident and a depredation.
Okay.
So public safety incident is where a lion is behaving in a way that people are at risk, and that's a determination made by the California Department of Fish and Game or local law enforcement. So in the case of a public safety incident, steps will be taken to eliminate that threat, and that typically means killing the lion.
Okay.
And so a few of these that have happened recently in California, there was one up in the Palo Alto area a couple months ago where a lion showed up in a tree in a suburban neighborhood, pretty far away from where you think a lion would want to be. It's hard to even imagine how it got there, but it did, and it's up in the tree, and the neighborhood's people are out looking at it. The Labrador Retriever is underneath the tree looking up, and what is law enforcement going to do in this situation? How can they safely deal with that for the people? And in this case, the only option they have is to kill that animal. So there are a number of those incidents every year as well, but not very many compared to the depredation. Depredation, it's an awkward word, but basically animals are regarded as property. Domestic animals are regarded as property in the state of California.
Okay.
And if you lose your property to a lion, you can request from the Department of Fish and Game a depredation permit, and that basically authorizes the removal of the offending lion if it can be caught and killed within the next 10-day period.
And whether it's the depredation or even relative to the public safety threat, I'm sure that some of the folks listening to this show would think, hey, instead of killing it, why not relocate the animal to a slightly different area or a significantly different area? Or if not the wild, maybe even a good sanctuary. Can you sort of address why those really aren't options in this case?
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons that we're very actively engaged in research, is we need to come up with better answers than we have right now to this dilemma. If a lion gets into trouble, and lions have lots of ways of getting into trouble, then what are our options? Oftentimes, the only real option is to kill the lion.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of relocating them, that just really doesn't work. An adult lion establishes a home range or a territory and will occupy that area. And if you take that lion and move it to a different area, they're not going to necessarily stay where you put them. There have been instances in the past where lions have been relocated, and they've moved hundreds of miles within a relatively short time period. So
back to where they were, or
sometimes back to where they were, or sometimes to completely new places.
Wow!
If you think about it, our wildlife management agencies and public health officials, who wants to take the responsibility or the liability of taking a lion out of a bad situation, putting it somewhere, and then having it not stay there and go someplace else? So it's a risk to do that, and biologically, it doesn't necessarily work. If you relocate a lion into an area, a male lion, let's say, into an area where another male lion occurs, there's very likely to be a dead lion pretty soon.
Yeah.
Mountain lions in North America, as opposed to lions in Africa, are pretty antisocial. They only want to get together with other lions to mate, males and females. If lions encounter each other during those non-mating times, they oftentimes kill each other.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, I see why that's... Because I was thinking that when I, again, was sort of getting a little more familiar with this specific topic, that I thought, well, geez, some of the sanctuaries that we've even discussed on the show are pretty gigantic, and you think, well, okay, if mountain lions roam a large distance, and that's one of the reasons they couldn't be relocated, well, elephants, it's a similar idea, but now, as you say, the thing about, A, how solitary they are, and B, how, especially if it's males, that, they're... there's going to be a dead lion there. And C, even the thing about moving either back to where they were relocated or to another area, I guess, there's just no way.
It doesn't really work. And
it's
also important to understand just how much land a mountain lion needs. 100 square miles would be a relatively small home range. So an area 10 miles by 10 miles. We've had lions here in San Diego County where we're doing an intensive study that are using two or three times that amount of area as part of their weekly and monthly haunts, and that's a tremendous amount of area. So you talk about sanctuaries. There really are no sanctuaries or places you can put a lion where it will have anything resembling a normal life.
Right. So you'd be confined, and it just wouldn't work.
Yeah. I mean, there are lots of places that have lions in captivity right now, but they're basically relatively small enclosures or cages.
Sure.
And that's not much of a life for a lion either.
Right. Well, it looks like we might have a call. You want to take a call from the listener? Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals with Walter Boyce.
Hi there. I have a question for Mr. Boyce.
Sure.
Is there a particular time of year that mountain lion attacks, or their presence is more kind of obvious, or when these things happen more often?
Sure. That's a really good question. Is there a particular time when lions are more likely to encounter people? A little bit of background on lion biology. So lions, by and large, seem to try to avoid people. But as they raise their youngsters, and it takes about 2 years for a young lion to reach essentially maturity where it's willing to go out and establish its home range, at that point in time, those two-year-old lions will take off and leave the area that they were born to go find their own area. Because, again, lions don't do really well when they overlap with each other too much. And it's those lions that tend to show up in places like shopping malls or downtown communities. They're basically youngsters that are going out looking for a place to live, and unfortunately, they don't know what's a good direction to head.
I see.
So they end up at the wrong place at the wrong time. The lions can basically have cubs any time of the year, and so this dispersal, we call it, of the youngsters can occur almost any time of the year. So the short answer is to your question is no, there's not really a particular time of year when you're more likely to encounter a lion. I think what's happened lately, though, is with the recent attacks, we have a much heightened awareness of the fact that we're sharing the environment with lions.
Yeah.
And people that have been seeing lions in the past but maybe not telling the news media or officials, there's more reports of it and there's a little bit more awareness, so it seems like it's happening more often.
Yeah. Could I ask one more question?
Sure.
How do the wildfires affect the mountain lions in terms of them coming out of where they normally live?
Yeah, that's a great question. What happened with the wildfires and how does it affect the lions? We're looking at that in a really detailed way now here in Southern California with satellite radio collars that basically tell us where the lions are every 2 hours. And what we've seen is that during the fires, some lions actually died. It surprised me. I thought a large animal, mobile animal like a lion, would be able to move out of the way of the fire. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, that appears to not always be the case. If you think about lions as, you know, they're like us. They have to eat. And if you don't eat, you're not going to survive. If there are no deer left in an area because a fire has destroyed the environment for that particular period of time or even killed the deer, the lions will go to where there are prey. But what we found is even though the fires of last year were relatively devastating, not every area burned within the area that a fire occurred in. And there are pockets of habitat where deer survived. And we know for a fact that lions didn't abandon those areas completely and take off and look for a new area. So the bottom line is I don't think that lions moved substantial distances because of the fires. They basically had to find new ways to survive in the areas where they occurred, and they would go where the deer were.
Oh, wow, that's great. Thank you very much. I've always been curious about these things, so thank you very much for taking the call.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, bye.
And I just want to go on record saying that I think I'm handing over the hosting duties to that caller because she certainly asked the two best questions so far on the show. But Walter, let me just because we're probably going to near the end of our time and there's a few other things I really want to try to get to. I guess starting with how did or when did you sort of develop this expertise to really be the mountain lion guy? I mean, was it always kind of a personal interest that merged with your academic area of study, or how did you develop that kind of?
That's a good one.
I'm trying to compete with the caller, so I'm trying to get my best questions in. Yeah.
I had a couple fleeting experiences with mountain lions years and years ago. I encountered a mountain lion in southern Arizona on a dirt road one night as I was driving down off a mountaintop, and I did something stupid. I saw the lion in the road. It was sitting there looking at me in the headlights, so I stopped the car, got out, and started walking towards it, and it took me a few seconds to think about what I was doing, which didn't make a whole lot of sense at all. But other than that, until about 10 years ago, I really didn't have any intention of studying lions. It really came about because we were studying bighorn sheep here in San Diego County, and we thought disease was the reason that these sheep had become endangered. And it turned out that it was actually mountain lion predation, that 70% of all the bighorn were being killed by lions. At the same time this was happening, there were a series of attacks, including a fatal attack at Cuyamaca State Park, and it became obvious that if we care about the health of this ecosystem, we needed to not just look at a single species like bighorn sheep. We needed to look at wildlife that includes sheep, deer, lions, and their interaction with people and the habitat that we share. So basically, it was a dawning realization that if I really care about conservation and care about people, which I do, You have to look at the whole system, and you got to come up with answers that allow people to make good decisions.
Wow, that brings me to something else, but looks like we might have another caller, so let me see if we can take them if you would like as well. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals with Walter Boyce.
Hi, I wanted to ask the question that I know everybody's dying to ask. What do I do if a mountain lion attacks me?
What do you do if a lion attacks? Basically, the bottom line is you fight back. Remember that attacks are very rare, but if by chance a lion does attack, there are a number of cases that have occurred across North America where people have successfully fought off lions. The most recent one in California that I'm aware of happened in the Sequoia National Forest a little bit earlier this summer. A young woman was hiking with two male friends. She was attacked. Her friends came to her aid, and they fought that lion off. Ann Yellow, when she was attacked on her bicycle, her friend Debbie and a couple other cyclists came along. They fought the lion off. So the bottom line is you fight back.
Do they have any particularly vulnerable area?
Do they have a particularly vulnerable area? My image of battling with a mountain lion is like juggling with a chainsaw that's going. They have claws and teeth, and they're incredibly strong. But think about defending yourself against another person. The eyes would be one of the most sensitive areas to try to gouge or poke in. That would probably be your single best bet.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks so much for the call.
Bye.
Walter, so... we are just about at the end of our time, but I think maybe this all kind of hooks into my next question, because I think we'd be remiss if we let you go without having you fill us in a little more on the Wildlife Health Center and kind of its missions, because I think we've sort of at least peripherally touched on that a little bit, but I'd love to have just kind of a more direct explanation of the missions and how it works and studies that you're focusing on at the moment.
Sure, thanks, Duncan. Well, the Wildlife Health Center is based within the School of Veterinary Medicine at UC Davis, and basically, what we're concerned about are wild animals, but it's not wild animals that are pets or wild animals in a zoo. It's wild animals in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we sustain the health of these animals and the environment at a time when the human population is rapidly growing? So what we've done is created a center that's focused on addressing the important issues where people need information, doing science and making sure that information gets to not only the academic journals, but really important, the managers of our wild lands and our wild animals, the legislators in Sacramento and at the federal government level, and then really importantly, the people that live, work, and play in California's environment. So we're really trying to do science and get information to people that allows them to coexist with wildlife. And opportunities to be on your show are exactly, I'd really appreciate it. That's what we want to do. It gives us the opportunity to share some of the information. And anyone that wants to learn more about what we do and the lion study can go to our website at www.wildlifehealthcenter.org.
Yeah, and it's a really great site. I should have mentioned it before, and I'm certainly going to mention it at the end and afterwards. But, yeah, it's really got a lot of great stuff. I mean, not just on mountain lions, but obviously, as you say, on a number of things that you guys have studied or are working on or trying to assess, and it's fascinating. I mean, if you care at all about animals, wildlife, anything, it's just any number of great things, both media stuff and academic things and further resources and links. It's just fantastic. So Walter, I think we're just about at the end of our time here, but gosh, I really, really appreciate you joining us here on Talking Animals. And I think the other thing too that you kind of said I think this needs to be restated maybe, is that really as there has been maybe a bit more attention focused on mountain lion encounters or attacks, the numbers overall, really, since I guess people have been keeping records, are quite small.
Absolutely. It's an incredibly rare event.
Yeah. But again, we've learned a lot about why they happen and how to avoid them happening, and even thanks to our caller, what happens if, God forbid, you are attacked. So we've learned a lot here today, Walter Boyce. So thank you very, very much for joining us on Talking Animals. And again, the website is wildlifehealthcenter.org. So
thank you very much, Duncan.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Again, Walter Boyce from the UC Davis Wildlife Health Center. Again, wildlifehealthcenter.org is the site. Again, really, really great, great site. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM, and streaming live on the internet at KUCI. www.nametune.org. It's time now to proceed to name that animal tune. Again, this is pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. Playing a little snippet here, and the first person who identifies it will be awarded a prize. We discussed the prize earlier in the show. So call in if you know it, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. It's Name That Animal Tune, Talking Animals.
But she's no drag, just watch the way she walks. She's a 20th century fox. She's a 20th...
Well, geez, I think we kind of gave you the answer, didn't we? That was nice of us, I'd say. So, now I want to, before we run out of time, as an example of people indeed calling in or IMing in with information, this just came in while, actually right before Walter joined us, from one of our listeners, and you may have seen it, it must be on the wire, I missed it certainly in the paper this morning if it was there, but headline, Furlong arrested for lobster stunts. Terminator 2 star Edward Furlong has been arrested after attempting to free live lobsters from a grocery store while drunk. The 27-year-old, a longtime animal rights supporter, was caught with pals trying to help the creatures escape from a store in Florence, Kentucky on Wednesday. The police report is reported on news site Page6.com reads, the above and his friends were taking lobsters out of the tanks. When they were asked not to, they began to argue with management. The police tried to apprehend Furlong. Quote, he put his arms above his head and started spinning around. According to an eyewitness, Furlong had to be bailed out of jail by John Schroeder and Randall Rubin, the directors of the movie Furlong is on Location Shooting in Kentucky. So, there you go. That came in again by IM. Trying to keep up to date with all kinds of news, some more serious than others, but, you know, I guess that's serious in a different way. So, anyway... But we have just about, I think, reached the end of our show, this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, the University of California, Board of Regents. And I want to thank again our guest, Walter Boyce, remind you one more time of the website. It's wildlifehealthcenter.org. Also want to thank you all for listening, for the cool phone calls. Great, great questions. Again, I've got to sharpen my interviewing skills to match those of our callers this morning, but I really appreciate those. Next Monday, our guest will be Darlene Arden, award-winning animal-oriented journalist and author, most recently of a book called Unbelievably Good Deals and Great Adventures That You Absolutely Can't Get Unless You're a Dog. So hope you'll join us for that on Talking Animals next Monday, September 27th. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include Just Today Alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan, followed at 5:30 by Counterspin. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like that each weekday from 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI, you guys... Let's try that again. Take two. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, still not doing it, I also host a show, surprisingly I'm hosting any show at this point, called The Dead Air Zone. The last edition of the Thursday night 8 to 10 p.m. version will be this Thursday, and it's wherever it's scheduled. I hope it'll be scheduled somewhere else coming up shortly. It's truly eclectic, from Afrobeat to Zydeco. Yeah, that's A to Z, that's right. So when you have a chance, check that out. Also, again, please check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. I also encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, quiz questions, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along. It's talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Really, really, I do. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. As always, be kind to animals, be kind to others, be kind to yourself. And as always, of course, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune, one that should slide smoothly into Jeff Scott's show, The Blues Disease. This is John Lee Hooker with a song called Black Snake. And we'll catch you next week on Talking Animals. Mm-hmm.
Here's a mean black snake been sucking my rider's tongue. Here's a mean black snake been sucking my rider's tongue. And if I catch him down, he won't come back no more. And he crawled up to my window, and he crawled up in my bed. He crawled up to my window, all up in my baby bed. Here's a mean, mean black snake been sucking my rider's tongue. Get me some toad frog's hips, mix it up together, and whoop it up good. Bet your mind bottom dollar you won't suck my rider's tongue no more. Mean, mean, mean black snake been crawling round my back door. Been crawling round my back door. Me on through the day, he wore me all night long. He wore me on through the day, he wore me all day long. I'm putting my bottom down. I'm gonna kill. Kill old black snake. He won't suck my rider's tongue. He won't suck my baby's tongue no more. That mean, mean black snake